11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 37 degrees and overcast. Today is Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The Coast Guard Admiral in charge of Alaska has broken his public silence on charges against the survivor of a helicopter crash that killed three people from Air Station Sitka. Lieutenant Lance Leone faces charges that include the military equivalent of negligent homicide. It will be up to Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo to decide whether those charges proceed to a full court-martial, get handled administratively, or are dropped altogether. But Leone's attorney says comments Ostebo made on a Juneau radio station compromise his ability to be fair in the case. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Ostebo appeared on KJNO's Action Line program on February 10th. During the hour-long talk show, he was asked about the case against Lieutenant Lance Leone. Here's some of what he said.
I think where the American people ought to look at this and the people that, you know, here is this isn't a witch hunt. This isn't anything. This is a process that we go through. And at the end of the day, the American people should feel proud of their military, that we hold folks accountable, that we thoughtfully look at these things, that we provide all the rights and support for the defendant that they deserve and have earned and are legally bound to, and we follow those rules.
After the accident in July of 2010, Leone recovered from his injuries and was cleared to return to flight, pending some training. Ostebo took command of the Coast Guard's District 17 in May of 2011. Sometime between then and September, Leone's orders for training were canceled, and the charges were issued.
We came here in May, and that was something we had to deal with, and we're dealing with it the way we're supposed to. And I understand the people of Sitka. I understand the emotion involved in this, and I'm okay with that. My shoulders are big enough to handle all that.
He said the process is ongoing, and that he has 90 days from the end of a December hearing to decide whether to proceed with the Uniform Code of Military Justice, or UCMJ for short, or handle the matter administratively. News of the North, a program on KJNO's sister station, KINY, reported Ostebo's comments. They appeared to deal mostly with the procedure of the case and not his own opinions, but Leone's attorney has a different interpretation.
Very, very few commanders. In fact, I cannot remember a single commander who would ever discuss an ongoing case with the media.
Retired Colonel John Smith is Leone's private attorney. He's practiced military law for 30 years. He says Ostebo's assessment of the judicial process left out a third option, to drop the charges entirely.
Well, it sounds to me like Admiral Ostebo has already made up his mind. He has made up his mind that Lieutenant Leone will be punished either via the UCMJ or administratively.
And Smith objects to Ostebo's statement that the Uniform Code of Military Justice is a lane that the Coast Guard is traveling down in order to investigate the crash.
The military justice system is not a lane. It is a very, very serious process that focuses on the alleged wrongdoings of an individual.
Leone's defense team maintains that their client has done nothing wrong and is only guilty of surviving the crash. Lieutenant Veronica Colbath is a spokeswoman for the Coast Guard in Alaska. She says the Coast Guard can't comment on an ongoing investigation, and that includes commenting on concerns that someone raises about the case. But she did say that Ostebo was invited on KJNO to discuss work that the Coast Guard is doing in the Arctic. And during the hour-long conversation, he was asked where things stood with the Leone case. Throughout the case, the Coast Guard has told KCAW it won't make public comments until the proceedings are settled, and Smith, on Leone's defense team, has not consented to an interview with KCAW until now. Smith says he's requested several meetings with Ostebo, but has been denied. He says Ostebo's attorneys told him that the admiral won't discuss pending litigation. If the case is sent to a court-martial, Smith says he could protest Ostebo's neutrality. Such a move could send the case to a new convening authority, which is the person who performs Ostebo's function in deciding whether to put Leone on trial. But Smith also said that he has not committed to any specific legal action.
I am intimately related and interested in taking that action which will best serve Lieutenant Leone. And in this particular case, I believe that Admiral Ostebo cannot make a fair and impartial decision.
The officer who heard evidence in the case back in December recommended that Ostabo drop the charges against Leone, but his recommendation is not binding, and Ostabo is free to pursue whatever option he deems suitable. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Sitka Assembly and the Sitka School Board met Thursday night in a work session to discuss the school district's budget. Last year, the city gave about $5 million to the schools. That amount has been declining since 2010. With budget times tight this year, the school district is not counting on an increase. The district faces a nearly $1.3 million deficit. The school board's commitment of $500,000 from reserves has already pared that down, but that still leaves nearly $800,000 to cut. School Board President Lon Garrison gave assembly members an overview of the district's budget and told them that Sitka's situation is far from unique.
We are right there with everybody else. Nearly every district across the state is facing a 7 to 10% deficit in their operating budget. So, you know, depending on where you go, I mean, Anchorage just cut $20 million out of their school budget. So they're laying off nearly 100 people out of their district.
Sitka hopes to avoid layoffs, especially from classroom positions. Parents and teachers have said they want to keep Sitka's historically low class sizes. Whether the district can do that will depend on outside funding sources. Garrison is just back from meetings with lawmakers in both Washington, D.C. and Juneau. He says federal funding is up for renewal, but the odds are long that it will happen. A bill to increase state funding is expected to have clear sailing in the Senate, but Garrison says the House is less certain. Assemblymember Mim McConnell wanted to know more about the House.
I mean, do they get it at all? Is there,
yeah,
are there
a lot of them
that get it?
A lot of them get it. How many on the House Finance Committee get it is yet to be seen. I think if the House was allowed to just vote its conscience, it would pass. The problem is that I think part of this is going to be played to the end game to see what happens with oil and gas tax reform. And we're going to be held hostage to that to some degree.
Thursday night's meeting between school and city officials was informational only. No official action was taken. You can link to all our reporting on the school and city budgets, plus the numbers from the school district on our website, kcaw.org. With oil and gas issues dominating Alaska politics, it can be easy to forget that as many as 20,000 people work in the state's commercial fishing industry every year. That's 6,000 to 7,000 more jobs than on the North Slope. So as many fishermen near retirement age, the next generation is looking to step into leadership roles. For the last 4 years, the Alaska Young Fishermen Summit has brought together some of the brightest young minds in the industry. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Anybody else in the audience like to come forward? Yes, come right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Timothy Nick, and I come from Dillingham.
Timothy Nick fidgets nervously in a blue sport coat as he addresses the House Fisheries Committee on a resolution pledging support for programs designed to boost the fishing industry. The 21-year-old got his first crew share at 15, working for his family's Bristol Bay SetNet operation, but he never intended to make a career out of fishing.
It was hard for me to watch my dad go through that hardships and not having that much profit coming out of fishing.
But when he was 18, Nick's father gave him the family permit and bought another one. Today, the father and son operations are turning a small profit. Nick says House Concurrent Resolution 18, which pledges continued support for education and loan programs for fishermen, shows that the state is committed to growing the industry.
It would be great to have that pass so that young fishermen like myself, who almost didn't go into fishing, to be able to keep the permits inside the state and amongst the local citizens who rely on fishing as a main source of income.
We're always really thrilled when we see one of our past participants writing a letter to the editor or testifying before the Board of Fisheries.
Sonny Rice is the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program agent in Petersburg. Since 2009, the University of Alaska Fairbanks program has organized the annual Young Fishermen Summit to groom the next generation for leadership roles. Rice says that's becoming more important as older fishermen get ready to retire, the so-called graying of the fleet.
Not only do you have to know all that there is about gear and fishing and running your boat safely, but you need to have a head for business. You need to have some business training to help you balance your books. You need to understand the markets for your product. And you need to know about the science and the management of your fisheries. And you need to get involved in the regulatory process.
The two-day summit features panel discussions and seminars, not only with scientists and policymakers, but also bankers, insurance agents, and economists with expertise in the fishing industry. Timothy Nix says he got tips at the conference that should help his family's fishing operation. While they only fish during the summer, Nix says the money has to last throughout the year.
Being able to make that money stretch through the winter is kind of one of the problems they deal with. Also understanding like the insurance stuff, the tax information. I've always wondered about that through the years, but this is opening me up to those like learning opportunities.
In its first 3 years, the Young Fishermen's Summit was held in Anchorage. Having it in Juneau this year gave participants the added benefit of interacting with lawmakers. Lexi Fish, a 27-year-old troller and longliner from Sitka with the perfect name for a fisherman, says she's always been interested in fisheries policy and thinks the summit will give her more confidence to express herself.
Probably my biggest priority is making the resource sustainable over the long term. It has to provide for people to keep their livelihoods commercial fishing.
Rice says one of the goals of the conference is to help young fishermen find their voice.
What they have to say is important. Their individual stories make a difference, and those decision makers want to hear those stories.
After hearing from participants in the Young Fishermen's Summit, the House Fisheries Committee unanimously passed House Concurrent Resolution 18. The non-binding measure appears to be headed for a vote on the House floor. About 50 young fishermen take part in the summit each year. Several seafood companies help sponsor the event. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.